Beyond the News Podcast.
This is Beyond the News Podcast. My name is Faith Dafa-Joseph. Welcome. The Nigerian 2023 general elections may long be over, with a new president sworn in amidst ongoing court cases challenging the result of the election. But it was one of the most keenly contested elections between three main contenders of the two major political parties and a new entrant. And that heralded one of the most talked about wave of this election cycle, the obedient phenomenon. The ardent supporters and followers of Peter Obi, and of course, the name Obedient is a play on his name and the word obedient. They have been called all sorts of names, from uncouth to rude to bullies, but they say they just believe in the man Peter Obi and will defend him from anyone. Peter Obi joins the Labour Party mid last year to contest for the position of president. So this particular episode of Beyond the News Podcast, I try to understand the obedient phenomenon. And my guests are self-described obedient and a professor of political science. Stay tuned.
Beyond the News Podcast with Faith.
My first guest is a lawyer who has been in the activism space in Nigeria for decades. Dr. Mahmood, popularly called the Oracle on Twitter, speaks to me about how and why he is an obedient. Let's talk about, you know, the obedient movements. That's a phenomena that took over Nigeria in the last 1 year. I mean, I think that was just before the primaries of the PDP, or right after the primaries of the PDP. And it just, you know, took off like that. I want to ask you first, are you an obedient or a Peter Obi supporter? Is there a difference between both?
To answer your question, I'm a supporter of Peter Obi, and I am an obedient.
Ah, interesting. But how did one man inspire people so much that it culminated in such a movement? There have been other people trying to push a third force agenda, but it all fell flat until Peter Obi. How did that happen? What do you think was the reason?
Some Nigerians will say grace. You say grace. If I will naturally be drawn to any presidential candidate on the basis of my activist history, I will naturally be drawn to Shure. But yeah, supporting somebody who does not share my ideological beliefs. I'm a Marxist, you know. And I told people, if you belong to Marxist or socialist organization, that are far removed from mass mobilization of the people. It's not about pious ideological appeal to isms, you know. It's about capturing the hearts and minds of those you profess to speak on their behalf. The crisis we are confronted with in our country today is not the crisis of isms, you know. It's a national crisis.
How do you think the obedient movement has shaped political discourse in Nigeria? Do you think that it has moved it forward? Do you think it has changed it?
Yeah, it has. What we have seen with the obedient movement, you know, in the past 1 year is only comparable to what we saw between 1946 and 1952, when we had the cities movement. In the context of contemporary history, we find a movement that has emerged seeking to find the needle in the haystack. If you look at the number of votes Labour Party scored as a party in 2019, just over 50,000 votes, and in 2023, just a year of national mobilization of the obedient movement, Peter Obi scoring and Labour Party scoring, you know, just over 6 million votes in spite of the politics of voter suppression. I think the obedient movement has done well.
It is phenomenal. What do you think happens to the obedient movement with the court situation? Because it could go either way. So let's look at both scenarios hypothetically. What do you think will happen to the obedient movement if Peter Obi emerges winner, or if it doesn't emerge winner?
Like you read me on time, it can go both ways. I'm a lawyer, but I don't invest so much emotions and confidence in our judicial process. You know, I say this with all sadness. Like I've always argued, politics of power continue to trump law in our country. Law should shape or provide guidance, but unfortunately, law is not subservient to power. Mm-hmm. And if law is subservient to power, I have no assurance that the obedient movement will rot victory out of the rump of judiciary as we know it. Mm-hmm. I may also be wrong. You know, the five judges of the Court of Appeal, they try to be conscionable and live to their conscience. Either way that the judgment goes, this I think will happen. The obedient movement will return back to its base, see what went wrong in 2023. Build on their weaknesses or strengthen themselves from their weaknesses and build on their strength and see if another shot can be made in 2027. Okay. But we do not have that luxury of time. We need change now.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mahmood, for speaking with me.
Thank you.
The obedience movement has long been described as one that is majorly propped up by young people. So next I catch up with Wei Milube. She's a young lady in her early 20s, and people in her age demography have more particularly been drawn to Peter Obi and very proudly wear the toga obedient. She is my next guest on the program. Wei Mi, you are a young person. Your age group is the largest demography in Nigeria, you know, presently, especially when you're talking about registered voters in the last election. One of the things that the young people did was take everybody by surprise, especially with the obedient movement. I want to ask you specifically why it took Peter Obi for that movement to come up. What is it about him that inspired a generation like this?
Well, you know, there's this ideology. I think, let me leave it at an ideology. And it's a bit of a stereotype that my generation is not interested in politics. We have interest in other things as well. But they tend to sometimes forget that the people before us didn't necessarily give us something to work with, right? So it's kind of like we are learning on our own.
Sure.
So after the whole, you know, NSAS, that was a trigger, it is a catalyst to the obedient movement. And it was just kind of like during NSAS, we told ourselves that, okay, we've made our request, but it doesn't end there. During the next election, we're going to get involved. We didn't know how we were going to get involved. We just told ourselves that one way or the other, we're going to find ourselves involved. And I think for us, we've always seen the same repeated cycle, the same faces, and we just wanted something fresh.
Mm.
And when Pio came on board, I think his message has been consistent. For me, I didn't even know Pio prior to 2022.
Interesting.
Right? I didn't know him. Right, I always say it, and I think if you go and dig up some of my old tweets in 2019, I was kind of rooting for Fela Durutoye. I mean, for me, I just right from time I was just like, I'm tired of the whole APC, PDP. So when Pio came, it was just kind of like a lot of people were like, oh, we know this man, right? And he was a former governor of Anambra. I knew him first as a former governor of Anambra before I even knew that he was person running for vice with Atiku previously.
Interesting.
Right, because it kind of felt like, at least for me, at that time I was 18 years old, so it was kind of like, oh, Atiku is running for presidency, Buhari is running for presidency. Well, we knew Buhari's vice president because, well, it was Buhari was the president at that time.
Yeah.
So when Pio came, we had Pio, Kingsley Mohalo, those were the people that I was even looking at, because I was like, Atiku and Tinubu, it was kind of obvious. And then I saw the whole Give Us Peter Obi match.
Yes.
And, after a while, I went on Twitter again, and I just noticed that people were just kind of talking down on obedience of that time, right?
So you had not joined the obedience movement at the time?
This was like February, March. Then after the Owo massacre, I think that Owo massacre just made me snap, and I'm like, I think it just brought out the voice in me, and I was like, we are going to be very, very loud. Anyhow, we want to do it. This is not a time to be silent. And then David just released that Bopo Chicago article, and I read the whole article. It was kind of like, because I was already kind of doing it, I'll just read little articles, analyze like the pre-election scene, and say, okay, this is what is happening. Because I was like, you people don't read. I mean, I like to read. Mm. So if you don't want to read, you will listen one way or the other. This information would go across.
You'll get it.
So I just kind of put out a tweet, and I said, oh, do you guys want me to read the David Montaigne article? People were like, yeah. And that was how I found myself reading the article of
let's talk about, you know, because you were like, anyhow it comes, you're just going to get into it. What do you feel when people say obedience, they're rude, they're aggressive, you know, they're ill-mannered and things like that? How does that come across to you?
You know, as somebody that did not jump right into it immediately, right, as someone that was like, that sat at the backstage and observed everybody and came in because they said we were rude, I'm like, we're not rude. These guys are not even... I still remember the statements way before even this man made interest, right? That time, they were even the ones telling him that he was going to run. He had not even come out to say he was going to run. And I remember then they would just shut them up. I'm like, but these people have opinions now. The same way you guys are carrying this one, a lot of these people carry their own now. It's not by force. And sometimes people tend to forget that there was a time that it was very, very heated. They are the ones that even taught them how to be heated. They did not wake up one morning to be heated. Not wake up one morning to be heated. Now show us way. And we said, okay, fine. So this is the method and the way. This is the truth, the light, and everything. Good and fine. We'll follow it. So it's kind of like, we are rude because we are keeping it real. We are rude because we are keeping it issue based. We are rude because we are doing the investigative journalism that you guys are supposed to do. We are rude because we are the ones that are kind of like unveiling the gaslighting and, you know, the abnormalities that we tend to normalize.
So you're basically fighting for your future like this.
Exactly.
Wayne, has it ever occurred to you to just leave Nigeria and leave the obedient movements? Because, you know, there are people who are already despondent that there's nothing going to come out of this. Do you want to leave, or are you going to stay and keep fighting?
You know, that's a very good question. Like, leave Nigeria, like, even before the whole BN thing, I've always said that I wanted to go abroad to further my education because I like school. But I wouldn't leave Nigeria because it's kind of like I've always said that I was going to. But I come to realize that even no matter where I am, I'm still going to be loud about it. Because I've met people that are not even in Nigeria and they are loud and their influence is felt from where they are, like across the Atlantic Ocean, and they are feeling it. And that's the beauty of social media. But leave the obedient movement is a lie. We are going to be here.
What about if the tribunal thing goes sideways? What about if you don't get the results that you hope for, that you want?
That's the thing, hope and faith. I hope not. But if we are going to play devil's advocate and we don't get it, I think the next thing to do, right, and was just put these guys on their toes, right? Because seeing the people that are, you know, hovering around them, these are guys that don't even want to put them on their toes. These are guys that they do not want to be held accountable, right? They are so used to getting away with everything.
Thank you so much, Wayne, for speaking with me. It was such an interesting conversation. Of course, I cannot go on without trying to understand from the academic perspective what the obedient phenomenon means for our budding democracy. So, I speak with seasoned professor of political science, Professor Adel Jinodu, who is also a senior non-resident fellow for the Center for Democracy and Development in Abuja, to get his take on the obedient phenomenon. Thoughts on the obedient social movements? And I also want to get your expert opinion, you know, on the role that emotions like frustration or anger, you know, that the roles that they played in pushing this movement.
I don't regard the obedient movement, so-called. I mean, you call it an obedient movement.
Yes, sir.
But I don't really know whether you can call it a movement. You know, it's a protest movement, if you want to call it that, since against what the followers perceive to be the political situation in the country, which they do not like. But what they don't like about the current situation, I really don't know. Because the movement is not something that just comes overnight. It must have a manifesto. It must have, if you like, an ideology, where it is coming about from. And essentially, it is not usually named after a person.
So you think that the obedience movement does not have an ideology, it does not have a goal, it doesn't have a manifesto?
I'm even saying more than that. I'm saying it is not even clear what it wants to achieve other than a change of government.
I mean, looking at the fact that majority of the people who claim to be obedient are young people, do you not see that it might have resulted from frustration and anger and just a rebellion against the status quo?
That is my point. Frustration against what? Rebellion against what? And what do you want to put in its place?
A better Nigeria?
What does a better Nigeria mean? For example, what is their view about the current party system? What party system will they put in place of that? Are they going to work within the system to change the system? Or are they going to work outside of the system to change it? Because they are even working within the system now.
Yes.
And if they had won, what would be their manifesto? I mean, it would be run on the manifesto put forward by the Labour Party.
Yes.
You can argue that the Labour Party, it may be a social movement, but is the obedient movement different from the Labour Party?
Some people would say that what we have as the obedient movement was as a result of what happened with NSAS, and that's metamorphosed into the obedient movement.
No, there are many others who are making the same point. How is the obedient different from them? Many people are also making the same point. We want a better country, we want a better this, we want a better... But how is the obedient... I mean, for example, how is the obedient movement, so-called, different from the Labour Party, which is the banner on which Obi stood for the election? And I'm not even sure about your trying to link the obedient movement, so-called. Is the obedient movement the NSAS movement, for example?
Well, the reason why I am linking both of them is that I have spoken with some young people who claim to be obedient. They linked it to the NSAS movement, that when the NSAS movement failed, they decided, you know what, if the government of the day would not listen to us, then maybe we would try to get a government that would listen to us.
The NSAS movement, it was quite specific in what it was talking about, police brutality, excesses by the police.
Yes.
But what does the NSAS movement want to replace the police with? A reform police?
So do you see this as a social movement, but not a political movement?
You see, that is what I'm saying. From my own professional point of view, you may not agree with me. But a social movement is not something that just emerges overnight as a result of one specific situation. The underlying movement, it grows. It grows over time. And before NSAS, in what ways did the NSAS movement manifest itself? I mean, just would have been growing. What are the various issues that coalesced around the NSAS that made it, you can call it, is it like a social movement or a protest movement? But a social movement, as far as I understood it, is a movement that wants social change. And it has to define what is the character of that social change. It's not just fighting corruption. It's not just fighting this. It must be, this is our vision of the future for Nigeria. And this is how we are going to do it. We may be on the cusp of a social movement emerging in the country. What is the NSAS position or the so-called BDM on ethnicity in the country? I've had it argued. Let's agree that the obedient movement is cultural essential, is very essential of young people. But young people defined in terms of what age category. And even if we agree from young people from the age of 15 up onwards up to 50, 55, or from the age of voting, let's say 18, to about 55, say these are the young people, or 40, these are the young people. What do they want Nigeria to become in terms of the role of ethnicity in the country today? All I'm saying is that does the NSA movement, or let's say we agree that the obedient movement, does it cross-cut religious or ethnic factionalism in the country?
What can we call it then?
I cannot call it any movement other than the fact that it is, because I have not done any study about it.
Okay, sir.
And I simply know that they embrace the Labour Party candidate, namely Peter Obi.
So basically, followership of a person, that's basically what it is right now.
Yeah, but the Labour Party is not a party of young people alone.
Of course not.
So that it may be a group within the Labour Party that now wants to use the Labour Party to achieve certain ends. Okay, yes. So this may be the beginning of a movement for the future.
Okay.
But so far, we cannot say it's a movement because, you know, a movement is not something that it just happens
overnight.
And then Then, furthermore, so the point is that if it's a social movement, now that elections are over, so what next is he going to do to bring about into existence his vision? And I've not even seen any vision coming out of what you have called obedient movement. I've not seen a manifesto, a program, or a view of Nigeria about this is the vision of the obedient movement for Nigeria, other than what the Labour Party on that platform will be run contested.
So you don't see this moving past just the followership of a person?
You don't personalize a movement.
Okay.
Because the movement must be something that is beyond the person. May provide the light, may provide the inspiration. But beyond that person, what is the movement? Now the elections are over. What is it going to do next?
Those are very important questions that they have.
So you cannot say you are just
provided answers
fighting for 2023 general elections. If you lose, if
what
you
are not going,
say what next? Now, the other point I'm raising is that have we done any study to say that the young people we are talking about have cross-cut ethnic and religious lines? What is their position about restructuring in the country? What are their views about Nigeria's foreign policy? The point I'm also making is that it is only 10, 15, 20 years now when we look back. This movement started from that time, and we have seen it gravitated up to this time now. So it is too early in the day.
That's what I'm saying.
It's too early in the day. The basic point I'm making is this, that a social movement is defined by a vision of what the society, state of the future should look at.
Thank you so much for your time, sir.
All right, thank you.
To wrap up this episode of the podcast, my last guest is an obedient from the southwestern part of the country. Akinoloye shares with me why he identifies as an obedient. Thank you so much for speaking with me today. The obedient movement took the entire country by storm last year as, the preparation for the 2023 general election took center stage. What made you decide to be a supporter of PCLB or an obedient?
I think in the past few years, there's just been the resurgence of youth voices being a lot more active, being more pronounced. With the NSAS protest, equally being a victim myself, felt the need to, lend my voice. I would say Peter Obi representing sort of the consolidated frustration, anger, and representation of what we felt true leadership should look like. When I say representation of anger and frustrations, obviously against the ruling class, the political elites, we need people that want to show intentional leadership. You take his track record, the unblemished antecedents he has with corruption cases not being filed against him, you see him being frugal. You can't look at a man like that and say, oh, he's not deserving of higher leadership, because again, the people we've tried have failed woefully, and I think it's just time we depart from the norm. So yes, identifying as an obedient.
You mentioned the NSAS movement, that this was like a build-up, the aftermath of that. So you would say that the NSAS movement sort of led to what we now see as the obedient movement?
You can split that into two halves, and I'll take it as a yes. So I would say the Sorosoke attitude from the NSAS protest played a huge role in how people found their voices and said, we're going to be politically involved. Now, post-NSAS, there was a lot of, you people want to change Nigeria, go into politics, you're not going to do it from protesting. Okay, we're going to go into politics, and we're going to come with that madness. And I think the energy, the flavor, and the what you call belligerent, nature of what they say, obedience, aggressive, that it's coming from that place of, you don't read us, you don't take us seriously, we will show you differently.
Let's talk about, the people who say that the obedient movement is basically just a regional, tribal, or religious movement. I want to get your thoughts on that, considering, of course, the fact that you are from the southwestern part of the country.
So I think that's a poor attempt to colorize the obedient movement as one that's restricted to people of a certain ethnic group or perhaps region. It's obviously, it's a fallacy. It's a failed narrative. I'm from Ile-Ife. I grew up in Port Harcourt. I was born in Lagos, schooled in the U.S., so I'm as diverse as a human being can be. And for me to look at Peter Obi of all the options and say, this is who I identify with, it shows that I am very pan-Nigerian in my outlook. And I think, you know, if you would put me in a circle and look for all the attributes that makes me a Peter Obi supporter, you cannot put me in a particular box. So, you know, where they try to frame it as, oh well, Southeasterners are excited and, you know, they want their own, that's why you're seeing the overwhelming energy, is false. As a matter of fact, I would even say this on record, I appear to be a lot more obedient than the average person from the Southeast. So it has nothing to do with the region, the language, or the ethnic group that, you know, Peter Obi belongs to. And I think, again, we're simply saying a quest for a new Nigeria, a Nigeria that works, is not one where ethnic affiliation or perhaps religious practice is what would be the deciding factor. So I think it's just a very poor narrative. But again, the establishment would look for every reason to dissuade and perhaps convince people on why this movement sort of is a facade, but it's not. You know, they took us for a joke. They said four people tweeting in a room, they will not win more than one local government area, they will not win one House of Assembly seats.
True.
Look at what we did. 37 House of Rep seats, eight senatorial seats, one governorship. We're not here to joke. And this is, you know, reviving a party that was basically on the shelves 7 months to elections and having that kind of turnout.
So did you face any backlash? You just say you're from Ile-Ife. There's a lot of Yoruba renewal and stuff like that. Did you face backlash for being a
from the APC mob and the establishment, you know, groups who feel threatened and perhaps never saw this resurgent energy? Of course, there was a lot of that. But again, you know, people are entitled to be stupid. I wouldn't hold that against anyone. People say it's politics. It's not politics, it is the worst form of campaign. It has nothing to do with tribe. When I change my dollar at the market, it doesn't ask me if I'm Igbo or I'm Yoruba. If I'm buying fuel for 600 naira, it does not ask for my religion. So I think, again, that was very, very irresponsible. But I have friends who've run for mayor in the state of Colorado, Yoruba as they come, black as they come, in a predominantly white society, winning office. Nobody told them white people Ronu now. So, you know, where do we now come up with sort of this very reckless way of, you know, again, defining what we expect to be reactions in politics?
Let's talk about the court cases going on. If after the court case, the mandate is not recovered, what next for the obedient movement?
I've sort of seen presidential judicial panels go along, so I would say this with a sense of responsibility. I'm not truly emotionally invested because it's a very long, drawn out process. You let the lawyers do the work. Beyond that, the courts do what the courts do. Let's hope that they uphold the law. Let's hope that our lawyers make a great case. In the midst of that, life goes on. Meaning, you know, you have House of Rep members who are going to be Assembly, Senators who would go, you know, work on bills and legislation. While the court is going on, all of that would not stop. Governance would have to continue. So for the OBM movement, it's just to make sure that we have our eyes on the ball. Respect to seeing that, again, we continue to keep being that voice of conscience. Speak up, speak truth to power. Demand what we think, things that are acceptable within the ambit of the law. We have to focus on all those issues. So Peter will be in the seat or not, you know, again, doesn't mean that we're ineffective or we're irrelevant. We will continue to push because we want a Nigeria that works.
So you're saying that the obedient movement is not just about the 2023 election, it's about asking for accountability from whoever.
Reform, yes, of course.
Okay, then that's basically. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Beyond the News Podcast with Faith.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Beyond the News podcast. Will the obedient movement be that one that will be studied years from now? Will it have much more impacts on our democracy beyond the 2023 general elections? Time only will tell. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Beyond the News podcast. I will see you next time.
Beyond the News podcast with Faith.